Goedemiddag, everybody. One of the challenging issues which an army and military leaders and the government and the political leaders have to deal with in times of war is the issue of civilian casualties, collateral damage, and the problem of what to do when the battlefield is in a place where there are both combatants and non-combatants. Sometimes you have women and children or men who are not soldiers, who are not armed, who are not fighting back. They are quote-unquote innocent bystanders. And sometimes the nature of the war is such that if you attack the enemy, so there are going to be civilian casualties. People who are, again, quote-unquote innocent people who are non-combatants are in the line of fire or are there if a bomb goes off or a missile is fired, etc. And the question is, what do you do about such a thing? We know that certain protocols of war, such as the Geneva Convention and earlier protocols of war, distinguish between combatants and non-combatants to the point that one is at least required to make an effort to avoid... one is required to make an effort to avoid civilian casualties. Certainly we know that the State of Israel has come under criticism many times for their alleged violations of this idea, for attacking Palestinian populations, and civilian targets are sometimes hit. Most recently, we read about the Goldstone report. The fact that the United Nations condemns Israeli behavior is nothing new. Clearly, there's no absence of bias or no great fairness of treatment. It seems that when Jewish civilians are casualties, there don't seem to be too many inquiries or commissions or committees set up, investigations. But when the Jews perpetrate it and there are Palestinian civilian casualties, then all of a sudden there's public outrage. The United Nations jumps into immediate action to figure out what happened and how we can condemn them. So the Goldstone report is just the latest sham in this regard. But nonetheless, the question is, how does one deal with non-combatants in a military situation? So I'd like to look at this evening. We'll see in a moment how it emerges from our schedule. But I'd like to look at what the halachic issues are. Again, I'm not here to make any political comments, no more than I just alluded to, and certainly not military comments. Obviously, military people have to make judgments and so on. I'm just trying to explore what some of the halachic issues in this situation might be. So the Torah records, it's printed in the first source, in Perek Lamed Daled of Bereishis, in Parshas Vayishlach. The Torah records the whole story with the abduction and rape of Dina, and then the reaction of the family of Yaakov, specifically ultimately of Shimon and Levi, who in effect duped or deceived the people of the city of Shechem into becoming circumcised. And then, as the Pasuk says, starting in Pasuk Chav Hei, Ba'im HaShlishi, Biosam Kalavim, on the third day when they were in pain and suffering and so on from the after effects of this procedure, Ba'ikush Nevin Yaakov, Shimon and Levi, Achei Dina Ish Charbo, Ba'alor Leher Betach, Ba'yargu Kol Zohar. Shimon and Levi took their weapons and they came into the city quite confident because the people wouldn't be able to fight back because they were still recovering from their surgeries, and they wiped out all the males in the city. And the Pasuk Chavav, Eschamor, Veshem Beno, Hargulafichar, Chamor, who was the leader of the city, and his son Shem, who was the one that wanted to marry Dina, they killed as well. Ba'ikwa Dina, Veshem, Ba'yitzeo, and they took their sister Dina, and they left. And it mentions that the corpse is there, and they took the cattle and whatever else. What's the reaction of Yaakov to this? So the Pasuk says in Pasuk Lamed, again, it's still printed in source 1, Vayomer Yaakov, Oshun Alevi, Achartem Osi, Lavisheni, Beosheros, Bakana, Bapriz, Vanim, Esay, Misbar, Venesu, Alevi, Kunu, Mishmarati, and Evesi. What have you done? Says Yaakov to Shimon and Levi, you've betrayed me, you've made me look bad, you made me sort of stink in the eyes of the neighbor, you know, you deceived them and so on, and I'm a small amount, so they're going to all gang up and they're going to come back at me and then kill me and wipe out our whole family and so on. And Yaakov clearly is dissatisfied with this conduct on the part of Shimon and Levi, and they respond in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayomru Hachzona Yaseh Sachosenu. Are we supposed to allow our sister to be treated like a harlot, to be treated like a common prostitute? End of Perek, end of discussion. So you see here in Parshas Vayishlach, it seems that the Shimon and Levi get the last word in, right? The father Yaakov was angry at what they had done, seeing they had no right to do it, or it was a bad decision to do it, and it was not good for the future that they did this. But they answer and Yaakov doesn't respond. However, it's not necessarily the end of the story, because in Parshas Vayechi, we'll see the psukim later, you can look at some source 4, and we'll come back to that. But the psukim later indicate that when Yaakov was on his deathbed, years later in Mitzrayim, he roundly condemned Shimon and Levi for this behavior, according to the simple way of reading the psukim over there, and he says, and so on, that they did the wrong thing. So then, from that point, Yaakov did get the last word in, and he clearly carried this anger at them to his deathbed. So therefore, that's the background to this issue. Obviously, this is an event which disturbs us. Certainly, we read the psukim and we try and understand how can Shimon and Levi behave. What gave them the right to wipe out an entire city, and they seem to have acted, as I say, with great deception and trickery and so on. So the Mefarshim deal with this problem. The Rambam himself, and that's in the second source, the Rambam Hilchos Melachim, Perek Tes, Halacha Yudalev, is talking there about the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. We know that there are seven mitzvahs which really given to Adam Arishon, the first six, and one added to Noach later. They're known as the seven Noachide laws, right? The Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. And among the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach is Dinim. Dinim, that they have to have a system of law, a system of justice. Exactly what that means, we discussed a little bit in the Sanhedrin, and we once spoke about a few years ago about whether there's a requirement to enforce that, or that we should encourage that, and so on. But one of the sevens they know is dinim. So the Rambam writes there in Hufas Malachim Parakes, again Alocha Yudal, the case of Mitzuben Al Hain Al Hadinim. In what sense are they commanded to have a legal system? Chayavim lahoshiv dayanim b'shoftim chol plachu plachu ladon b'sheish mitzvos elu. Says the Rambam, the Bnei Noach are required to set up judges in every district in order to judge concerning these six other six mitzvos. Lahazir esam, and to encourage and warn the people to follow those laws. Uben Noach she'ovah lachas mishem mitzvos elu yeharig b'sayif. And a Ben Noach who violates one of these seven doesn't have to keep 613 mitzvos. They have to keep these seven. And if he violates one of these sevens, he's punishable by execution by the sword. And now the Rambam adds, "Umipnei zeh nischaivu kol balei Shem hariga." Says the Rambam, that's why the citizens of Shem were deserving of the death penalty at the hands of Shimon and Levi. Share Shem gozal, because Shem kidnapped Dina, right? They saw it, they didn't do anything about it. They failed to fulfill the mitzvah of dinim, one of the shevets of Noach, and they were all therefore collectively guilty, says the Rambam. And so on the rest of the Rambam. But the Rambam seems to understand what he writes here, that the Shimon and Levi were acting in a proper fashion, and in fact the people of Shem were all deserving of death. Not only Shem himself who took Dina and raped her and so on, and perhaps the father who tried to orchestrate whatever he tried to orchestrate, but the whole city, they didn't judge. Huh? Yeah, that's a good question. The Erechot was, okay, but that's the Rambam. The Rambam's position was that they were deserving of death. Okay, that's over for this reason, that they violated the Shevet Zinov. Right. Where was the Eidus and so on? Okay, good question. But that's the position of the Rambam. The Ramban takes issue. The Ramban here in this week's segment in Parashas Vayishlach is a long piece, we won't read the whole thing inside, but on that the Perek Lamedalev, and that Pasuk Yud Gimel, the Ramban says, "V'rabim yishalu, eich osu b'nei Yaakov atzadikim ma'isa zeh lishpoch dam noki." What kind of things with tzadikim? How could they go ahead and spill innocent blood, right? The harav heishiv the sefer shofim. He quotes the Rambam. However, he disagrees because the next paragraph, "Ein dvarim halalu nechonim b'nai." With all due respect to the Ramban, I don't think that the Rambam's interpretation is correct. And he basically goes on to say, because even assuming that they were chay of Misa, since when is it the job of Shimon and Levi, their job to go around? Is it any Bnei Yaakov's job to go around the searching, you know, for going and see, are they observing the Shem, they know properly, are they not, and to execute those who violate it, is not their business? And second of all, you could argue that says the Ramban, that that these people, let's remember, Hamor and Shem were the chiefs of the town. What, so the lower ranking people are going to judge them? Not so simple. So anyways, the Ramban disagrees. It's true, he says, that they should have judges and so on and so forth, but it doesn't carry with it a death penalty necessarily, and therefore the Ramban says at the very end, "Avol inyan Shem ki bnei Yaakov b'avur shel anshei Shem rishoyim." The people of Shechem were showing the Dama Chasam Kamayim Ratzul Inokim Ahem Becher No Kemes. They wanted to take revenge. They were angry at what happened to their sister. V'hargu HaMelech V'chol Ansheir of Kiavodohim. Right? They killed the king, the leader of Shechem, and all his servants. And they didn't care about the fact that they made a bris and so on. However, the Ramban says that at the end, that that's why Yaakov was angry at them on his deathbed. Yaakov did not accept their reasoning. And it says at the very end, he cursed their anger and so on. Kiyosu Chomos Ansheir. Because perhaps, you never know, look at the last words of that Ramban, V'ula Yashu El Hashem, V'hargu Oso Chinam, Kilohere Elem Klal. Right? They maybe, who knows, maybe they would have done tshuva, maybe they would have been influenced properly, they didn't do anything wrong, and therefore the Ramban maintains that in fact the Shimon Levi did not have the right to execute the people of Shem against the Rambam, and his proof is from the Psukim, that's in source form, the Psukim in Parshas Vayechi. Shimon V'Levi Achim, Klei Chomos V'Keresem, right, we can read the Psukim, Or Apam Kioz, right, they get scattered, and punished. So Yaakov Avinu is angry at them. And the Ramban repeats in Parshas Vayechi, the fifth source, on that Pasuk, Perek Mempes, Pasuk Hey. The Ramban writes, Anochem Ve'enai She'omar Ki Shimon V'Levi Achim Gurim Dom and so on. V'klar Peirashti Ki Yaakov Kotzaf O Shimon V'Levi. Yaakov is angry at Shimon V'Levi. V'har Gam Anshei Ir Babu Shasu Chomas. Ki Hein Lo Chotu Ahem Klal. They didn't do anything wrong to them, the people of Shem. Ubo the Bris in Imolu. They entered a covenant. They had the Bris Mila. V'ula Yashu El Hashem V'yu Kulam B'Klal Anshei Beis Avram. And then maybe they would have joined the family of Avram like Avram won over people and so on. So Ramban is clear in his disappointment, so to speak, or his understanding that Yaakov was disappointed, he did not behave properly. That's the position of Ramban. Yeah.
But again, it's easy to talk
because what happened to Yeah, they didn't make it, right. They fizzled out of it. But still, his point was he never liked to kill them. Already gone, yeah. But anyway, the Ramban says they acted incorrectly. Now, Ramban will answer, heck, yes, how would Ramban answer? It's true that Yaakov seemed angry, but, you know, there are those who interpret that what Yaakov was referring to here on his deathbed had nothing to do with the story. Shem was angry at Shimon Levi for selling Yosef, a different parsha. So, okay, again, you're asking a good question in terms of the parsha, that includes it in terms of the event, but I was really using that as a springboard to get to the comment of the Maharal Mikrad on this pasuk. The Maharal says on this in Parshas, it's not in the sources, I guess it's on my computer. In the Gur Aryeh, the Maharal Mikrad, the Gur Aryeh is the Bereishis Parak Lamadal Pasuk Yud Gimel, says something different, and his basic thrust is not really what brings us to our conversation. His position is the Maharal Mikrad says that he quotes the Rambam, but he mentions that this was a war between nations. Okay, they had violated the Dina, and there was a response, and this was one group, the people of Shem, and Bnei Yaakov, and they went into battle, so to speak. He doesn't deal in this piece with the fact that they deceived them, whatever else. Again, and one can argue, I'll say in advance, one can argue about the Maharal's reasoning for explaining the parasha of Shem, but what I want to get to is what he says at the end. He says, Af al gav, the harbe hayu shalo asu. Okay, even though there are many people perhaps in Shechem who were not party to this whole dispute, had nothing to do with it one way or the other, and yet they were executed anyhow. Ein ze chiluk, kevan shahayu ba'osa uma sha'osa ralahem. Because they're part of that nation that had wronged the Jewish people. They're part of this war. Whether each individual citizen of Shechem was personally involved or not, if they're part of that nation, then they're part of that nation, therefore mutarin lava alehem l'mechama. And therefore you can wage war, and even fight them in the battle, the chen heim kol hamulchamos, and so it is in all wars. So again, one can argue about the specific application to Maisa Shem, but we see, relevant to our discussion about civilian casualties, that the Maharal is in the position, okay, it says clearly, that in a battle, when you're fighting war against another nation, and you're fighting against the other nation, you don't have to now start discriminating and say, well, did you vote for that guy and made him the president who declared war on us? Are you part of it or not part of it? You don't do that. Whoever is there. And sometimes there may be people there who don't support the cause, who are not identified, have nothing to do with it, but if you're at war, you're at war. And therefore, the Maharal says, and we'll see shortly, I don't think he's encouraging civilian casualties. When you're at war, you wage a war against another nation, anybody who's part of that nation is fair game for the battle. That's what the Maharal says, and that's what he says. Again, I stress, you can argue whether it's, you know, you can argue with his application of this to the story of Shechem, but in terms of a position, this is the Maharal's position. In a similar vein, in more recent times, in Zalman Tarotskin, it's also not on the sheet, okay, in the Aznayim LaTorah, here in Parshas Vayishlach, it's Perek Lamed Hei Pasuk Kaf Hei, HaMefarshim Amlu Limtzah Hetel Aregas Kanchei Shechem, right, these Parshas Shechem, and HaMefarshim all bothered to justify this. She says, listen, Mr. Fina, I would say the following. Shein kan din shel Yochanan and so on. It's not a matter of one person, right? They had a general comment. Ki nevoa asav Yisrael lishkav es bas Yaakov. A terrible thing happened. Lishkav es bas Yaakov. It was like, it was an affront, says the Zalman Sfarsin, against the Jewish people as a whole. That's what the Pasuk says, that Ki Nevoa Asah, Lishkav Es Bas Yaakov. It wasn't just in the general sense that, you know, they raped Dina, bad enough, but they interpret it as an affront to our entire family. Right? Ki Nevoa Asah, Lishkav Es Bas Yaakov. And therefore, it ain't that chait neged Yochid, like neged Am Yisrael. Uviakseh Amin Nevoa Kazos, Mitzad Nesi Eretz Acheres, Gor Eretz Acherem Nechoma. In the relation between people, an act against the daughter of the president, so to speak, you know, is a declaration of war, says the Rizamas Rashi. That leads to warfare when people attack that way. Okay? So the first thing was to weaken the enemy. That was the plan with the Bris Mila, to weaken them. Begam, and it's interesting, you look carefully, he says, even Yaakov's anger, leaving out to Rechi, notice what Yaakov said to them, says the Rizamas Rashi. He didn't say, how could you spill innocent blood? He said, you're going to get me into trouble with the neighbors, right? The other neighbors. He didn't seem to, not necessarily openly criticizing, huh? But he's being practical. It was not necessarily an ethical comment. You can certainly read it that way. That's what Naima Torah says, okay? They did it without talking to him. They took it in their own hands. They should have investigated better and so on and so forth, okay? But that's what the position he takes. And therefore, I think he would agree with this statement of the Maharami Prophet as well, that we have now another authority saying the same approach. So when there's a war, so there's a war, and people are fighting in the war, you have to do it. So getting back to the sources, so we know that warfare is sanctioned and indeed sometimes even required by the halacha. So I have in source 6, Koheles, the famous pasuk Koheles, Paragimel pasuk Ches, Eis Lehov, Eis Lisnow, but Eis Milchama, Eis Shalom. There's Eis Lehov, the time to love. There's also time to hate. There's a time for peace. There's also time for war. Sometimes necessary. It doesn't mean we're happy about it. Doesn't mean we look forward to it. But sometimes it's necessary. And in fact, the Kadosh Baruch Hu himself, we say the next source is Shmos Perek Tezvav Pasuk Gimel, Adaz Yasher, Hashem Ish Milchama, Hashem Shemo. We refer to Kadosh Baruch Hu himself as a warrior. Hashem Ish Milchama. And lest you think that that's just Tama, you know, Adaz Yasher, one time thing. The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, Daf Beis and Beis, in source 8, Amalei, the Gemara there records the discussion in the future between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Umos HaOlam. And it says there that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Maya Satem, what did you do constructive? So, Omer Lefon, Rebbe Shom, Harbe, Gesharim, Gesharim, Harbe, Kochim, Kalash, Harbe, Mechamas, Osino, Vekulam, Osino, Bishri Yisrael, Kadesh Yisrael, Askim, Torah. Some members of the other nations will say, we built many bridges, and we conquered many cities, and we did everything, and we waged many wars, and we did this all so the Jews should be free to study Torah. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, never mind, they're not true. You did everything for yourselves. You built bridges to be able to charge tolls, right? To collect tolls to make money, right? Cities also to get taxes. And at the end is what's relevant to us. Milchamos ani asisi. Any wars or waged, that was my doing, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shemar Hashem Ish Milchama. So you see that Hashem himself wages war, we understand that. And elsewhere in the Torah, in Parak Chof of Pasuk Aleph and Sefer Dvarim, in the end of Parashat Shoftim, the Torah says, it's the next source, Ki Seitan Nechama Alevecha, Baraisa Sus Varechva Amar Av Nimcha Lo Sirmehem, Ki Hashem Alapecha Yimah, Hamalcha Yimah Tisra. When you go out to war, don't fear your enemy because Hashem is with you, says Rashi, source 10, Dvarim Parakach, Pasuk Aleph, Al Oivecha, Yiyu Beinecha Ka'oivim. You have to view your enemies as enemies. Al Terachem Alehem. Don't have mercy on them. Ki Lo Yerachemu Alecha. Because they're not going to have mercy on you either. So you see, you have to, when you're at war and there are enemies, you have to view them as enemies. And whoever is in the line of attack is in the line of attack. That's what seems to be going on here. In a similar vein, the Netziv makes a comment. I don't have the Netziv, but I have the Pasuk in the Chumash in the Paraktes Pasuk Hey of Bereishis, Parshas Noach. It says, "V'achet dimcham l'nafshechem edrosh." Right, you're not allowed to spill blood. After all, you could ask, how could you kill in war? You're not allowed to murder, you're not allowed to spill blood. Right? And that goes back to the Shemitz of Noach. V'achet dimchem l'nafshechem edrosh miyad kol chayo edreshenu u'miyad ha'odom. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will take care of someone who spills innocent blood. But he says, miyad ish achiv edrosh es nefesh ha'odom. I will miyad ish achiv, right? In the hands of someone who harms his brother, I will take care of him if someone spills blood. So the Netziv in the Hamek Dover, it's on the paper, the Netziv there, on that pasuk, says, miyad ish achiv. clear. Yeah, if you murder somebody who is innocent, who's a brother, who's, you know, is not an enemy, but in a war, isn't it sitting there? You have to kill people. That's the nature of war. Again, maybe not something we want to do, but when it's necessary, that's what you have to do. So from all of these sources, it seems fairly clear that certainly the Maharal forms a basis for this position, and the Zalman Sarusky in the more modern times agrees that when there's an affront and there's attack against your country, then you have to respond. And even if there are people who are amongst the enemy nation who personally may not be necessarily an enemy of yours, or, I mean, it's interesting, somebody told me that a gentleman here in Tina told me that his father, you know, fought in the Austro-Hungarian army in World War I, European. So he said that, you know, they were lined up in these trenches. Anyone knows about World War I, everything was trenches, you know. And when it was time to fire, this guy, he didn't care who, you know. He said he told his father would fire up in the air. Why? Because there could be another Jew on the other side. What do I want to kill another Jew? You know, they're not going to start firing at another Yid. You know, there's stories about how, you know, there would be a break in the war, and they make a minyan for minyan with the two people on two sides. We'll have this time of year, you know, when there was the Christmas break, so that everyone got together and sang songs, you know. So this is what happened, and this is what this gentleman told me. His father did not want to fire at the enemy because it could be Jewish guys on the other side. What am I killing? What do I have against him? You know. So Lamaisa, but when you're in a war against an enemy, so that's what Rashi says, you have to treat them like an enemy. And if there are civilian casualties, if they're really, you know, they're part of that nation, then that's the way it is. However, this is not a blanket, should not be construed as a blanket permit to go indiscriminately attacking non-combatants. That's true too, yeah.
The sources don't really say talk about non-combatants. They're just saying at certain times you have to fight
us. Right. But I'm saying the Maharal said, the Maharal said specifically about all the people of Shem were, you know, were part of that nation, so they were targets. And it was Zalman Sarusky and Zion LaTorah. You're right. From Rashi itself, you could say that's limited to the battlefield. From Rashi and from the Gemara, what I'm trying to demonstrate is that the Torah does recognize warfare. Right, as the need, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is himself a warrior. And the Netziv also says, you know, unfortunately those sources aren't on the paper, but the Netziv also says that there's only, you know, in war you have to kill. I mean, you're right, you could argue that the Netziv is only talking about on the battlefield. But that's why I want to stress that it's correct, that it's not an indiscriminate license to go, you know, license to go indiscriminately attacking. And the fact of the matter is, earlier in our parsha we find something else. This is source number 12. The Pasuk says in the beginning of Vayisha, and Paris Lamed Bey is Pasuk Ches, the Pasuk says, Vayira Yaakov Mod Vayetzel Lo. When he hears of Esav coming to approach him with hundreds of souls, hundreds of men, so Yaakov says a double language, Vayira Yaakov Mod Vayetzel Lo. He was frightened, he was nervous, or was, you know, anguished, okay, he had anxiety about it, right? So what does it mean? He was nervous and he was scared, he had anxiety. So Rashi explains the next source, again, Lamed Bey's Pasuk Ches, Vayira Vayetzel, Vayira Shema Yehareg, he was afraid of being killed, but he was also afraid of killing others. Right, that's the comment that they attribute to Golda Meir. The famous Golda Meir said, we can perhaps entertain forgiving the Arabs for killing our sons, but we can't ever forgive them for turning our sons into killers. Right, it's not something we want to do. And that was Yaakov, I don't know if she was referring to this Rashi or not, but Rashi probably not. But Rashi makes that comment over here. So it's interesting, the commentaries on Rashi, including the Maharal, which I'll get to in a second, you know, take note of this point that Rashi makes. And, you know, that certainly teaches us that conceptually, we're not looking, God forbid, to inflict civilian casualties, and one should try to avoid it. Rabbi Mizrahi, on that pasuk raises the question, gets on the sheet, and that pasuk in the beginning of Vayishlach raises the question, what's he afraid of, and so on and so forth. So some say, well, you know, he was dealing with Esav, and it would upset his father, maybe that's why he had this extra anxiety. If he would kill Esav, you know, it would devastate his father, so it was a different kind of a cheshbon. But, he says, what about the fact that these people were coming, what were these 400 guys coming for? So they happened to be going for a walk with Esav. I mean, they were with him, presumably, you know, to fight. So isn't there a din of Rodef, right? Isn't there a din of, you know, Habola Hargacha Hashkein Lahargo, the Gemara says, someone tries to kill you, so you defend yourself. So Mizrahi says, well, there's different, sometimes you have to try and stop a Rodef, Be'achad Me'evarav, you don't kill him, you try, you know, if you can shoot him in the knee, and that'll stop him, it's also okay. That's what he talks about. It's interesting, the Sifsei Chachamim on that pasuk says, raises the same issue. He says, Afal Pisha Nashav Esav Yerotin, Parnasha Yaakov, the Chol Adam Nitzal Hatzos are near the Panasha Rod, Mikol Mokum, Yochol Hatzom, Echamei Verb, okay, then he's trying to wound him that way. But Yesh, before that he says, Yaakov I misoy shemaragu anosim shall Esav shehem lo bo lahargas Yaakov. El anosim shall Yaakov. They were not coming with Yaakov. They were going to start up with other people who were in Yaakov's camp, whoever they were. Anyway, you can go back and forth is exactly who was coming after who. But that's what he was afraid of, because this Rashi seems to fly in the face of the fact that you can defend yourself and even kill enemies and so on and so forth. What do you mean? So I think you can interpret his meaning. Very simple. We don't want to do it. Yaakov was afraid about it. He was a tzaddik. They don't want to kill other people. But at the same time, he realized that if the situation calls for it, he had to. Now, that's Vayira. He was frightened, intellectually or emotionally of being killed, of course, but also having to kill others. But Lamaisa, he'd have to do it. I think if you turn around, it's even a riot to this position. In other words, Yaakov was nervous about, having to do something. He would do it. Didn't say he wouldn't do it. He didn't want to do it. I think that really sums up our position on this subject, the halachic position, that if you have to, you have to. But of course, it's not something you want to do. And even the Maharal himself talks and has a long piece in that pasuk, right? He says that perhaps the people of Esav were just bystanders and so on. So I think you can put those together and not necessarily see it as a contradiction at all. Yeah. Right, that's it. So he didn't want him. Yeah, he didn't want him. Yeah. Okay. Now it's interesting. We see a similar thing. Right, they were guys. They would have gone on either side. They weren't looking to kill. Anyway, but I think if you put together that Rashi, because at first, again, that Rashi looks like a steer to our position. If we're saying like the Maharal, that when you're fighting a war, so even the or like Rosh Zalman Sorotskin, so what was Yaakov scared of? The answer is so the Kretch. It was Echad Meivor. Yeah, right. It's not something he wants to do. He was nervous to have to do it, but he would have to do it. And I think there's a raya to that from a pasuk elsewhere in Tanakh. Source 14 is a pasuk in the Haftarah of Parshas Zohar that we before Purim. That's when the battle, Shaul waging the battle against Amalek. Remember, towards the very beginning, Shmuel Perek Tesor Pasuk Vav. Before he goes out to fight Amalek, he says, "By Omer Shaul HaKeni, the Keni tribe, Luchu Sura Redumi Toch Amaleki, Peno Sibcha Imo, Vatos Isa Chesedim Kol Bnei Yisrael Balosam Mitzrayim, Vayoser Keni Mitoch Amalek." When the Shaul was going to fight Amalek, there was a tribe called the Keni tribe, who apparently lived amongst the people of Amalek, and Shaul had no quarrel with them. On the contrary, the Yisroels, Mekani, whatever, so they had helped Bnei Yisrael when they came out of Mitzrayim. So he sent them a message, up and up, But now, so therefore you see, we don't want to have any inner civilians killed, right? These were innocent parties. They were not part, and even according to Maharal, they were not part of that nation, they happened to live there, but he warned them first to get out, and they did get out. But again, the implication was that had they stayed there, they would have been killed and tough luck. They should have left. In other words, it would not have been that Shaul would have been wrong in fighting a battle against Amalek. He's commanded to wipe out Amalek, and he warned them to get out, and they did. But had they not, he would not have been guilty of killing innocent people. Because why? That's our position here. Because during a war, you fight the enemy. There are people there, that they're innocent and so on. That's unfortunate, but that's what happens. Yeah. Right, that's what they say, right. They drop. Right, they make phone calls, yep. Yep. They warned, Israelis did exactly that before the attack on Gaza. They did warn them, they told people were coming in and so on and so forth, which is more than any other name. Right, I know. I don't imagine there were too many phone calls made to Dresden in Germany before they bombed Dresden or before, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that Truman didn't warn the Japanese, obviously. So, but the fact is, really, I think they went beyond, but that's really what it is here. But the implication of this pasuk, and it fits right into our theme here, I think, that, yeah, first you want to avoid civilian casualties, Abadis, you warn the Keni to leave. But if they wouldn't have left, and then Dama Marosham, that's their own, then they should have left. And we see, it's interesting, I don't have it here also, there's a pasuk, this is a mistaken pasuk, it should be Perek Chavbeis pasuk Ches in Divrei HaYamim. That's the pasuk which says over there that the David HaMelech was denied the right. David HaMelech wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, David HaMelech, let me just get the Tanakh.
David HaMelech
benoyed
the Beis HaMikdash.
Beis HaMikdash, but because he had been a warrior, he had taken lives, so David HaMelech was, you know, told, no, you're not going to be the one, but your son Shlomo is going to build the Beis HaMikdash. So you're asking, wait a minute, David killed people for no reason? He was the Mechamis Mitzvah. He was doing what he was supposed to do in terms of the... And even Mechamis Mitzvah, the king has the right. So he was acting within Halacha when he waged war. And now you could argue maybe the story with Uriah that he... But that's not what it's referring to. It means in general, and again, it's a Divrei HaYamim Aleph, Perek Chav Beis Shri Pasuk Ches. So we printed the wrong Pasuk on the source sheet. So I'll read you the Pasuk inside. Here it is. Vayhi alai dvar Hashem lemor, dom larov shafachta. Hashem said to David, you spilled much blood. Umilchamos gedolos hasisa. You made many wars, great wars. Lo sidne bayis lishmi. You're not going to build my bayis, the Beis HaMikdash. Ki domim rabim shafachta ar tzolachonai. Because you spilled much blood.
We already quoted Hashem with the Elushim.
Yeah, yeah. Right, exactly. So the Radak has a comment, and he says that all of the, even... Okay, but the Radak in a course of his commentary says why the Beis HaMikdash are different and so on, special situation, but he says, and here are the words I want to focus on, maybe among some of the victims of David HaMelech wars were non-combatants, innocent, righteous people. Afal pi kein lo ne'anash aleihem. He was not punished for this. Ki kavanoso l'chalos harishayim shalo yifritzu b'Yisrael. He said to punish the general enemies, they shouldn't cause more harm to the Jewish people. U'lahatzil atzmo, kishayim eretz plishtim, and so on and so forth. Okay, so he said they couldn't build the Beis HaMikdash, because that's a special thing, the Beis HaMikdash, place of Shalom. But David HaMelech was not punished for even killing innocent and righteous people, says the Radak, because again, that's the nature of what happens in warfare. So I think that, you know, certainly a strong case can be made that while we try to avoid civilian casualties, when it happens, okay, that there are civilians that get, especially if they were warned, but even if they weren't warned, if they're there in the course of battle, so while it may be tragic, and it would not be, in the way I see it anyway, a violation of halacha. I would also add, as Rabbi Shachter talks about this in the Sefer Bikvei Hatzon, in Siman Lamed Beis, he mentions the fact that the Minchas Chinuch, we spoke about this actually in a different context a number of weeks ago, the Minchas Chinuch, these are not on the paper, the Minchas Chinuch in Mitzvah Tov Chof Hei Oz Gimel, and the Netziv, in at least three places that I know, he doesn't quote him on the Shechta, but it's in the Merome Sada, which is commented on the Gemara in Erev and Daf Mem Hei, and the Merome Sada in Kedushin Daf Mem Gimel, and also the Hamek Dover, he says it briefly in Dvarim Perek Chof Pasuket, we spoke about before, Kiseit and Amach and Alavecha, he says that in war, the usual rules, all these Achronim say the same thing, Revelva Salavechik says that also in the Chidushe, the Zeva Levi on the Chumash, in the Haftar of Parshas Bishalach, the Zvulun Amcheres, the Song of Dvorah. All these Achronim say more or less the same thing. Rashakta brings it here. He says that in a time of war, okay, in a time of war, there's a Rashakta Sefer, in a Rashakta Sefer? It's a page Reish Vav in Bikvei Hatzon. It's a Siman Lamed Beis, Os Beis and Os Gimel. And he quotes some of these, he quotes the Achronim, I think he mentions both sources, and he doesn't mention the Hamek Dover, he mentions other Achronim, Dvar Yoshua, that's the Dain Ehrenberg. It's a thin volume, and it's on Bishalach and Haftar of Bishalach. And he quotes others, Mikdash Mordechai, he quotes others, and he says that the whole concept, we mentioned this in the past, of Pikuach Nefesh and the primacy of life, that whole thing, which of course is a major foundation or cornerstone of Judaism, the life takes precedence of everything. You can violate Shabbat to save a life, and you can eat Yom Kippur to save a life, and all mitzvahs are pushed aside for the Kuch Nevis, except the three, you know, Gil Arayah, Shrikas, Domim, and Avodah Zarah, but everything else, life comes first. But he says that in a time of war, that's not the case. Otherwise, how could you ever have war? How could you have Mechemes Mitzvah or Mechemes Rishus? Every soldier should say, what do you mean? Pikuach Nefesh. I'm not obligated to risk my life. Pikuach Nefesh, you never have a war. So that's what he demonstrates here. That I'll read the Rashi's word. Elavadai dover baruhu shematzav shemuchama lo shayach bechalal din shel pikuach nefesh. In a war, it's not so much pikuach nefesh. That ipso facto, he says shein kein la olam lo narach shemuchama. They never have a war altogether. So. And then he goes on to say the next to Simeon Gimel, in the page ratio, next to target Gimel, in the page Reish Zion, he writes, Al pi advarim elah ha'nira lomar, duha din nami bizman hazeh, shemedina sisro omed esi matzav shemachoma, v'chol ha'froz ha'muhuma shebeinu dinam al pi alocha, kehem sheh shemachoma, we're going to go back to points, all part of one war, right? And tzrichim anshei tzahal linhogim kol amistakfin ve'eva afroz kemo shenogim mishas mechol amamish. Shim yesh tzorech b'chav, shehiru behem amanas b'harog. If you have to shoot to kill, you have to shoot to kill. V'im yesh tzorech b'chav, k'lifon min aninu alivarer min ha'mechmiyam ha'mechablim ha'terroristim ha'me'agadim. Sometimes hard to tell who are the terrorists. We all know that they run into hospitals and they'll pick up a kidney and start, you know, carrying a kidney ham while they're firing. So you can't tell, right? Exactly. He said, you can't tell. So he says, Tzal has to hit and even kill Kifi Hadoros on the Tech Mechol, it's ever necessary. Even though it means sometimes somebody who's innocent, unfortunately, is going to get killed. Lani refers to the same thing, like the Kamavur, Begur Ayla, Maharaj Yiprag, the Price of Yisha, as the Maharaj of Prague says. And others say the same. I just want, before I get to one of the other points, the Reshefta quotes also here, because he mentioned it's a time of war. So you could argue, well, one second, is it always a time of war? At what point, how do we define what's a time of war or not? So here he has the famous, a famous application, which is made by Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in a situation we've mentioned in the past also, that some of you might remember. So Mishnah Gittin says, on Daf Mem Hey, that I have on the sources already, Mishnah Gittin says in general that Ein Podinus Ashurin Yesov Kadei Demeyen. When somebody's kidnapped, you're not supposed to pay exorbitant ransom to redeem the person. Right? And the Gemara right away, and again, Mem Hayim Alphim, getting the next source, Iboilu, Haimit Ne Tikkun Ha'olam, and it says in the Mishnah, Kumi Ne Tikkun Ha'olam, repairs the world. What does that mean? Mishum Dukh, the Tzibur Ha'ol, Dil Mishum Dukh, Lidu Ba'al Ha'isi Tzvei. Is that just because it's too much, you can't burden the community to raise money to ransom people? Or is it because if you're going to do it, you're going to pay the ransom, so what's going to happen? Encourage them to do it. You know, if this guy sees, this fellow made $2 million by kidnapping a Jew, so then I'll try the same thing, and go retire to the Caribbean, and at the expense of the Jewish community, we'll encourage him to do more. And that's what the Gemara concludes. It's the Ligra Lysi Trek. Okay, so that's what it says in that Gemara. So I'll get to that in a second. So now, Tosfos makes an exception. That's in sources 19 and 20. Tosfos, in two places in Gittin, makes an exception. It says, usually you don't, but if the person is Muflag B'Chochma, he's a communal leader, a great Talmud Chochma, and so on, then you have to spend more. Although, people will know from history, the famous story of Maram Rutenberg. Maram Rutenberg refused, told the community not to ransom him. He felt it was too much. And even after he died, that he had left word not to, they wouldn't release his body, he still wouldn't. He did not want the community tax until an individual, his point was he didn't want to tax the whole community. An individual, very wealthy person, paid out of his own pocket to redeem him. That's what he did, and on the condition that he was buried next to him. Yeah, he was buried next to him. Yeah, the condition was he wanted to be very next to Aaron, which he was. So that's it. But you see, they didn't want to tax the community. So the story happened, I can't remember now whether it was 1970 or 71, but it was at a time where there was no actual battle taking place between, and Shepard quotes the story here on that page raised wrong, where there was a hijacking. There was one day when the Arab, and those in the 70s, if you remember, everything was hijacking planes. That was the terrorist mode of operation. So they hijacked four planes in one day. Four flights, and Rav Hutner Zichron Lebracha, the Chaim Berliner Shiva, was on one of the planes, and they flew the planes to the four planes of Jordan. Four different planes. Pia, as a side point, they tried to hijack an El Al plane the same day. I have a friend who I met years later who was on the El Al plane, and they didn't get the El Al plane, because El Al plane, that, and I guess all planes have it now, but at that time El Al was the only airline that always had security personnel on board the flight. And what happened was the pilot, my friend told me the story, the pilot, when he's, when they were being hijacked, most of the Israeli El Al pilots are former Army fighter pilots. So they know perhaps certain tricks, with the plane that maybe the average pilot doesn't, so he put the plane into a nosedive. Now the people, of course, didn't know what was going on. As my friend was telling me, everyone thought the plane's crashing. I mean, you can imagine the panic that ensued. But the panic was that everybody, this is Michael Fredman telling this story, so the everybody tumbled, falls down, including the terrorist, and then, by that time, because the terrorist fell down, so the security person was able to overpower them, and they didn't get the El Al plane. But so that plane was saved. But the other four planes were taken off to Jordan, Rav Hutton's Zohar. I remember as a kid, elementary school, was saying Tehillim, you know, for the people and so on and so forth. So apparently, the Talmidim Rav Hutton and Chaim Berlin had some wealthy Talmidim, so they had this idea that they were going to go to the State Department and they had, and basically ransom Rav Hutton. They should at least release Rav Hutton. Now, Shachter writes, the State Department was not interested, but you know, they thought of the idea. But they first went to Yaakov Kamenetsky, who was the Yeshiva Tavar Das at that time, and asked whether this, whether they should do this al pi halacha, because doesn't Rav Hutner fit the qualification of this Tosis in Gittin that he is a mufug b'chochma, one of the Gedolei Hador, and so on and so forth. So Yaakov says undoubtedly Rav Hutner meets the qualifications, but al pi halacha you can't do. Again, I think it was a moot question. I don't think the State Department would have gone for it. But you know, but l'maisa Rav Kamenetsky, you can't do it al pi halacha. Why not? Not because Rav Hutner doesn't meet the qualifications, but because he said this Tosis in this Gemara is talking about what type of people? People who kidnap, you know, to make a living. They're pirates, they're highway bandits and so on. They kidnap somebody because they want the ransom money so they can go, as I said before, retire in the Caribbean on that money. So then, okay, then you can discuss. He said, but when you're fighting a war, what's going to happen to that money? They're going to use that money to kill more Jews, to plot more attacks. It's going to end up causing more. Then you can't give money to the enemy in a war. He said, so what do you see? So the Shabbat said, you see that even though it was 1970, 71, it was not the Six-Day War, it was not the Yom Kippur War, but he still considered a time of war. Why? Because the Arabs declared war on the State of Israel in 1948, and now, other than Egypt, and this was before that, and Jordan and Sodom officially made peace, they're still officially in a state of war. They don't make any claims to the contrary. They're in a state of war. So he says, al pi halacha, one could certainly argue that we're in a state of war. Ramela, yeah.
So, of course, to release prisoners.
That's a different shiur. We spoke about that a bunch of years ago. I should give that one again. That's a big topic. But anyway, what comes out from there is that, so it's certainly a time of war, and therefore in a time of war, getting back to the Shefa's point here, in a time of war, we don't follow the same rules about pikuach nefesh and life. You can't. And therefore, he suggests the same thing here. You have to fight the war. You can't fight a war with a hand tied behind your back. And if it means that they're innocent, you're going to get, you don't want it. You try and avoid it, like with Shaul and the Kaney, and with you know, and sending leaflets or contacting people's cell phone. But if you have to, then you have to. Now, there's an interesting question. I don't want to read all the pieces. You know, this is there's a journal, Torah journal, called Tchumen, which is published in Eretz Yisrael by the Tzomet Foundation. So this one was published in Tavshin Mem Gimel, right after the what they called Mitzvah Shlomo Galil, you know, the first Lebanon war, they call it now, right? So they had a sort of panel discussion with some different rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, including Rabbi Avraham Shapiro, who was the Rav Ashi, and Rav Dov Lior, and Aaron Lichtenstein, and they had a, you know, different questions of halacha that came up. So one of the questions was relating to you know, how do you figure out, because really, and this will lead into the next point, I got your message, but I saw Rasha Weiss, I had it on the sheet, Chazon Ish to be quoted, we'll see in a second, but do you have to, you want to minimize civilian casualties, but you know, sometimes doing that puts your own soldiers at greater risk. So how do you cheshbon at it? In other words, yeah, I want to notify these people, come, what if that compromises, you know, your position? It's gonna, so Rav Aaron Lichtenstein in this piece to suggest that there is, you know, there is a, you know, there is something to say that, you know, maybe, we should cheshbon that in. In other words, especially if it's a lot of lives and so on. I don't know if I should find these exact words. And of course, the vexing problem is no doubt, but Rav Aaron was willing to entertain the possibility that, you know, one should, okay, that after all, the enemy is also created B'Tzelem Elokim. He mentions over here, these are people, and we know that Kadosh Baruch Hu did not want the angels to sing Shira after Kriyas Yamsuf, you know, because lives were lost, so we take that into account. And he says, you have to figure out, can you take many lives to save one Jewish life? I mean, that's the issue. So Dov Lior disagrees with that, and he says, a person has to do what he quotes the Maharal we mentioned, and he says, on the contrary, Rachmanus Hanovas Tochrei Vlad Yeshu Hilfeches Achzorius. Sometimes Rachmanus can turn into Achzorius, right? One man's mercy is another man's viciousness, because you're causing harm to somebody else. And he says, you have to do whatever you have to do. We have to and protect whatever we have to do to protect our own soldiers. That comes first. Huh? Yeah, sometimes they go, yeah, yeah. And Ravam Shapiro also, I think, disagreed with that. He said, and I disagreed with Aaron Lichtenstein. They said, no, we have to protect our own soldiers. What that point about sometimes Achzoris turning into mercy turning into Achzoris, to that the Rosh Weiss has an essay in the Parsha Shoftim, it's Siman Lamed Beis in Dvarim, where he has the Chazon Ish, which we quoted in the past, because he quoted, I heard you once said this here in Tina, and he quotes it in a different context. The Chazon Ish is talking in Sanhedrin, we'll move to finish up. The Chazon Ish is Sanhedrin Siman Chof Hei. In the Chazon Ish, he says, the case is, Yesh Lion, Be'echad Roach Chetz Holech La'arog Anashim Rabim. An arrow or a missile is flying in this direction, and it's going to kill many people. There are many people, right? The yachol hatosol letzad echad, you can somehow manipulate it that'll turn this. Or let's say you have a truck that's out of control, right? You lose control, and it's plowing to a it's a big area, a lot of people standing. So if you turn the wheel, you'll go over to his, you're going to kill the guy who's standing here, but you'll save the 25 people who were standing there. Are you allowed to do that or not? Because after all, this one guy wasn't in any danger. Now by turning it, you're putting him in danger. So the Chazon Ish says in that situation, we mentioned this, we talked about the question of fetal reduction. When you have a woman who has several babies and they determine that she's not going to be able to carry them all, so you have to knock out one. How do you figure out which one? So is that an, that's when we brought it up. That's why I heard the Russian wise refer to this Chazon Ish. But he says, even though it sounds like Achzoris to this one guy, Lamaisa, he says, it's Pu'ulat Hatzola. He says, it's an act of Hatzola, because what you're doing is not an act of killing, it's an act of saving. So again, you have to know where to draw the line. It's very difficult, and that's what we talked about here. And you know, I don't know. You know, that was. Remember, I think we mentioned that with that. Who's the golfer that was on a plane? Remember that last year there was a story of one of Payne Stewart was on a plane, and the people died in the plane. Apparently there's some oxygen problem or whatever, and the plane was flying, his own plane took off from Florida, was going to Minnesota someplace, and was flying over, and they lost contact, and they realized that something was going on, but the plane was simply going to run out of fuel at one point, and it was on autopilot, it was going to come down, and they were deciding, if it came down in a city, in a busy center of a city, many people died. They were going to shoot it down. They didn't know everyone was dead on the plane, but they were going to. They wanted to shoot it down over a meadow or something. Like there was nobody there. That's the issue. You know, even though it might have killed the Lamaisa, they were dead. It turns out, but at the time they didn't know that. Then they had to kill the three people on board to save 100 people down below, and that's a very, very difficult situation. So these questions came up in the Holocaust, where give over one person so we can save the other 100. Again, a different sphere. But my point in quoting this Chazon Ish here, and that's what Russia Weiss says also, is that sometimes an act of mercy, it's merciful not to save all these people, but you're risking our own soldiers' lives, and vice versa. Sometimes an act of mercy. So the Chazon Ish point is you do it, because it's fundamentally a Maisa Hatzolah. In fact, the Russia Weiss also quotes the Hakdama to the Pnei Yoshua. It's not on the sheet, but you look at the Hakdama to the Pnei Yoshua. The Pnei Yoshua writes what motivated regular Pnei Yoshua, it's a short Hakdama. He writes what motivated him to write the Sefer. So he said there was a big fire in his community, and a lot of people died, buildings collapsed, or whatever exactly happened. And he, I think, his own family were killed, but he was, he took a neder that if he comes out okay, he'll publish his Chidushim or something like that. And he writes, in the context of this presentation, he said that people, rescuers came, and by climbing over some of the fallen building, they caused more rocks and more woods. He said more people were killed by the people trying to rescue. But he said they're innocent, he said, because they were doing it as a Maisa Hatzola. They saved other lives, even though in that context. Again, you see the similar kind of idea. Let me just finish up. Again, it certainly rubs us, negatively to, God forbid, to have any, events have to kill and so on. But the Gemara says in Baba Kama Daf Tzadi Beis, I have that towards the end. The Gemara says sometimes, when you pick a carob, so the thorn comes with it, right? So that's what Rashi says. Sometimes, Shkenei Rosha Lokinimo, people who are associated with the Shohim, they get swept up in their punishment also. That's just, kind of a general comment. Now we know, I have here some statements from the Geneva Convention protocols of 1977, in Article 44, it says, because everyone says Israel always violates the Geneva Convention, but here's what it also says in the Geneva Convention. Combatants are obligated, are obliged to distinguish themselves from the civilian population. That's part of the Geneva Convention also. Or he says, the presence or movements, this is in the Article 7, Article 51, number 7, the presence or movements of the civilian population or individual civilians shall not be used to render certain points or areas immune from military operations. That's in the Geneva Convention NUFA. Even though there might be innocent people, that does not mean you have to cease military operations. In particular, in attempts to shield military objects from attacks or to shield inside. So, you know,
same
and,
what?
Same point. Yeah, what do you mean?
So Article 51 says that
right. Right, that's what I'm saying. Therefore, when you're waging on the other side, the fact that there are civilians there is not going to make it immune from your military operation. I think that's what it means. But anyway, that's the implication, right. Right, right. I know, and so therefore we have to respond. I think so. Just to finish, the truth is, the cross could also die in the first blue, the second shot. I'll just none of this. Gracious.
Sorry. I want to finish up with this because there are a couple of interesting points.
Go ahead. The Or HaChaim, well, this will manage to end. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh here in Parshas Vayishlach on Pasuk Perek Lamed Dalet Pasuk Chafei. Just reads it in the Or HaChaim, and it's a very similar comment in the Tosas, the Badas that came about by Tosas. It says Vayhargu Kol Zohar. Where is it? Vayhargu Kol Zohar. Kosher. Lama Yahargu Mishalo Chata. Why would she kill him if he didn't sin? Okay. So he says Lo Hayav Achen Hine Bnei Yaakov. Lo hayah b'daitam laharog el abal avera, right? They really only wanted to kill the people who made the avera. However, hargu kol b'nei ha'iram skipping with tzad shem hayu be'ezer shem. Okay, they assisted him, right? They harbored the people, so that's another thing. People who harbor the, and that's the most important also, people who hide or protect them, even though they didn't actually do it, but if you know, if you vote for Hamas as your leaders and so on, so then you're supporting. So it's hard sometimes to classify someone as an innocent bystander if he doesn't happen to have a, just because he doesn't happen to have a rifle in his arm, but still, if he supports them, and that's what the Or HaChaim wants to say, and the most important want to say about Letoz, if you support them, so that also, then you're caught up in there. That's our Samech, right? There's even an issue of Grama by Rodef and so on. Okay, I'll just end that Rabbi J. David Bleich in the Contemporary Halachic Problems in Volume 3 has an essay on preemptive war. So he's not really talking about our topic, but in the course of that, this Volume 3, it's page 277. He writes, not only does one search in vain for a ruling prohibiting military activity likely to result in the death of civilians, but to this writer's knowledge, there exists no discussion in classical rabbinic sources that takes cognizance of the likelihood of causing civilian casualties in the course of hostilities legitimately undertaken as posing any halachic or moral problem. My wife knew the sources, and he feels, again, it's page 277, I'll look it up in Contemporary Halachic Problems, Volume 3. He says that there are no sources that say this poses a halachic or a moral problem. Rav Shimshon Fala Hirsch, on this parasha, also here in Vayishlach, you go up and look it up in Pasuk Kaf Hey, writes very strongly, Yaakov was angry and so on, it was critical, but he said one sentence sort of gave Yaakov pause. At the end of Shishu Vahersha, he agrees with Ramban that it was wrong. But he said it sums up at least their position. Hachzona yaseh sachosena. Are we supposed to stand by and be patsies and be weak and be, nothing? Everyone can do whatever they want to us. Sometimes there's an affront that requires a response. And really, again, as I said at the outset, we certainly don't look for these things to happen. But there's an article, I'll finish with this, of Shol Yisraeli upon the Rabbi Yisrael. This is printed in Tzomet HaTorah of Medina, a different statement in Volume Gimel. At the very end of his article, 289, Hayot Tzimikol Zer, Sheyesh Mokom Tigmo Negatori Soil. Sometimes there's a place for an operation to take revenge against those who harm the Jews. Upula zehi begeta mechamis mitzvah. He thinks it's even a begeta mechamis mitzvah. B'chol osan upega shekorim laporim ulebalei brisam uli aldehem. Anything that happens to those who and their supporters and even children, he said, heim heim sharim was then was part of it. Heim avonim yisol, it's their own sin. Bein shum chol v'limanam pulos tigmo mechamas chashash sivku b'chait mepesh. There's no reason to be hesitant if that's what the military situation demands. From even attacking people who might be innocent. Ki lo ono hagomrim. We didn't start this problem. We're not the ones causing this. No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should they give us the ability that we shouldn't have to deal with these kinds of problems, and they should bless us all with Shalom and Neret Yisrael and Shalom HaYisrael. Agot Avach.